KALW.
This was a young man, never been in trouble before, was in the middle of a medical crisis and needed medical treatment for what he was going through.
A 20-year-old man died in an Alameda County jail. The sheriff's department admits it never should have happened.
Our jail was designed to do incarceration, but it was never designed to be a mental health facility.
It's a story being told across the country, often with devastating results.
Who do you call when someone's having a nervous breakdown? There's nobody. Just by calling 911, there's going to be officers with guns, with handcuffs. That only makes things worse.
Today, we're looking at the criminalization of mental illness. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Do you know that the three largest mental health treatment centers in the entire country are all inside jails? The largest is Los Angeles Twin Towers Jail, followed closely by Cook County Jail in Chicago. Studies have found that at least a quarter and maybe as much as half of the people killed by law enforcement had an acute mental illness, and those that survive the encounter often end up arrested and locked up. For the past several months, KALW's Andrew Stelzer has been investigating how the country's jails have become our default mental health treatment centers. Today, in the first of a two-part investigation, he takes us to Santa Rita Jail in Alameda County, one of the largest and deadliest jails in California.
Santa Rita made the news again after an incident that took place on June 10th, 2019. And no surprise, there's a video. This one is from the body-worn camera of an Alameda County sheriff's deputy working at the jail.
He's not answering questions. He's playing the game.
In the video, almost a dozen deputies and police officers surround 20-year-old Christian Madrigal and carry him from a police car inside the jail. He's stuck in a sitting position, already strapped into a wrap restraint device, which renders him unable to walk. One of the first questions raised by the video is why so many officers are needed. In addition to the wrap, Madrigal is handcuffed and has a spit hood pulled over his head. He's not following commands, but he's not resisting either. He's just sort of being still.
When I saw the videos, I just saw one young man being bullied by 10 officers.
Jose Jaime is Christian Madrigal's stepfather.
He never spitted at no one. He was never yelling. He was never violent. He was not challenging anybody.
The only thing Madrigal did say was he wanted to go home.
In some way, you can see him being, in fact, respectful to how they were treating him. And they were waiting for the perfect moment for them to just start kicking him, punching him, and throwing him to the ground.
What they did was arguably even worse, and a bit hard to explain. The deputies daisy-chained two sets of handcuffs, ran the chain through a metal slot in a cell door, and attached the other end to a doorknob. Then they locked him inside. For the next couple of hours, Madrigal remained inside a small cell, unable to move more than a few inches from the door. He eventually found a way to get the handcuffs in front of his body. The supervising lieutenant missed one of the required safety checks that are supposed to happen every 15 minutes. And at around 5:20 p.m., returned to find Madrigal unresponsive. He had used his own handcuffs to hang himself from the doorknob. He died in the hospital 5 days later.
There's a lot to digest and unpack from those videos.
Adante Pointer is a civil rights attorney representing Christian Madrigal's family.
What I see and what I heard is officers who were completely tone deaf to the idea that this was a young man, never been in trouble before, was in the middle of a medical crisis and needed medical treatment for what he was going through.
A year later, the sheriff's department decided to fire the lieutenant who ordered Madrigal chained to a doorknob through a hole in the door. And Madrigal's family got a $5 million payout from Alameda County. But beyond that one dangerous procedure, Poynter says there was an additional layer of incompetence and cruelty in this case. And it's something he's seen far too many times.
And that is someone who needs mental, emotional assistance, counseling, treatment, being met with bullets, handcuffs, knees to the back, asphyxiation, criminal charges, jail. And those are two different tracks. You know, what should have happened here is a medical professional should have been called out to do a medical evaluation of Christian right there on the spot.
You see, Christian Madrigal wasn't in Santa Rita jail because he had hurt someone or committed a dangerous crime. He ended up there after his own family called 911 for help. They urgently wanted him to see a doctor. Since trying psychedelic mushrooms 2 weeks earlier, Madrigal had been acting strange, not sleeping well, having laughing and crying fits. The whole family was worried, including his mother, Gabriela Covarrubias.
We knew that something had broken, that he was no longer Christian, that something had damaged his mind.
He was even arrested at the San Jose airport for charging through the metal detectors. A few days after that, his parents brought him home from Santa Clara Medical Facility for the weekend.
So we went to the clinic. We picked him up. The nurse was really direct and clear to me. If he continues acting up, if his behaviors continues the same, the only thing you have to do is call 911 and ask for a 5150. You tell them that he was ready here. So they will have no problem bringing him back.
5150 is California code for temporarily taking someone to get emergency mental health treatment. That was the crisis plan. And by Sunday night, things had gotten bad again. Madrigal was yelling and throwing his belongings away.
Before we call 911, I think we did everything in our power to make sure that he was safe. We talked to him, we hugged him, we mentored him, we spent nights with no sleep. I mean, we did everything that a parent should have done, everything. We wanted him to go to the hospital. He didn't want to go. We tried to force him, you know, tackle him, but we thought we were going to hurt him. So we said, let's call the professionals. Let's call the people who know how to handle with this. And I just wish I've never had. Calling 911 was our last resource.
On two visits to the family's house, that night and the next morning, the Fremont police said Madrigal didn't meet the criteria for a 5150. The second time, based on his behavior and use of mushrooms 2 weeks prior, they arrested him for being under the influence of drugs.
The last thing I said to him was, Chris, don't resist. Chris, don't resist. They won't do anything to you. If you don't resist, they won't do anything to you.
Madrigal's family had done everything by the book. They were told the police would come and take him somewhere safe for more treatment. He ended up in Santa Rita Jail, a jail that happens to have one of the highest inmate death rates in the state. In July 2020, several dozen people marched through the sweltering suburban streets of the town of Dublin and held a rally across the street from Santa Rita. Almost 1,000 people had been released since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, but inside this mega jail, the population was still over 2,000. And COVID case numbers had climbed up over 100. Bottom line, this wasn't a safe place to be, and the protesters were calling for mass releases. Among the crowd were Christian Madrigal's parents, along with family members of others who died at Santa Rita. Barbara Doss was one of them.
Santa Rita deputies killed my son. They beat my son badly. I miss him so much.
I'm going to dump you on the floor in a minute.
Man.
No, you come on.
Walk?
I'm going to dump you on the floor. You've been cool with me, but you're not being cool. So walk.
Back in June 2018, Doss's son, Dwan Armstrong, was serving a 120-day sentence on the weekends so he could continue to work and support his family. On his second weekend at the jail, Armstrong was acting erratically and told deputies he was high on drugs. Among other behaviors, he stripped naked, put his face in the toilet, and barked like a dog. The response? Body-worn cameras show Armstrong being put into a restraint device and spit hood, which later caused him to die of asphyxiation.
Come on, man! Sorry! Wait, legs. Stop resisting.
Every day that I have to live without my son, I'm going to fight for my son. I'm going to fight for other people's family members. It's not fair to us.
Doss and others have been campaigning for change at Santa Rita Jail since long before the COVID pandemic. Sikander Iqbal is deputy director of the Urban Peace Movement.
There's been 46 deaths in the last 5 years in custody. If you talk to other people in other countries, that is not normal. For people to die in custody is not normal.
17 of those 46 deaths were suicides, according to an analysis by KTVU. At least four others were prisoners in the mental health unit or on medication. People in fragile mental states are often subject to the same treatment as everyone else.
In Santa Rita, we know that people who have mental health issues, they're put into isolation cells, they're stripped naked, their contact with others is cut off.
Adante Pointer says this problem is not unique to Santa Rita, and it starts before people even get to jail. Across the country, mental illness is a key factor in many of the law enforcement killings people have been marching in the streets about.
Statistics show that about half of the people who are killed after encountering the police are experiencing some type of mental health emergency. And so if you believe that that's an unacceptable outcome, if you're unwilling to accept the carnage, then that means that we need to be thinking about what the solution is.
Healthcare! Healthcare!
By now, most of us are familiar with the defund the police slogan. But if you've attended any of the thousands of racial justice rallies across the U.S. last year, you may have heard some other, less publicized chants.
It has a title, if you will, of defund the police. You could call it whatever you want. I don't care about the title. It's the principle that's more important to me. The principle is when we have situations that are better served by other type of professionals because their skill set is more applicable to whatever the situation is, that's what we as a society, that's what we as a city government, that's what we as the public should expect to receive versus sending people for an armed response when there's no armed response needed.
For a variety of emergencies, people with badges and bulletproof vests aren't a very good solution. And here's something that might surprise you. The Alameda County Sheriff's Office agrees.
Our jail was designed to do incarceration, but it was never designed to be a mental health facility.
That's Sheriff's spokesperson, Sergeant Ray Kelly.
How this fell into law enforcement's lap, I don't know, but it did. We didn't ask to become psychiatric experts, but it fell upon us. Just like we didn't ask to become dog catchers and school resource officers and all these other things we've been asked to do. So this burden has fallen on law enforcement again to fix.
Santa Rita does have medical and mental health staff, but not nearly enough to meet the need. A federal judge is actually monitoring care at the jail as part of an ongoing class action lawsuit on behalf of prisoners with psychiatric disorders who claim they've been mistreated. Meanwhile, the county has had to settle lawsuit after lawsuit filed by families of people injured or killed inside Santa Rita. The East Bay Express reported more than $5 million was paid out between 2013 and 2017. That's not counting the $5 million that Christian Madrigal's family received. Kelly blames the system.
Christian Madrigal is an example of somebody that should not have ended up in jail. But what other recourse did his family have? Where was the community response team? Where was the facility that they could have taken him to get him through that mental health crisis?
Madrigal's stepfather, Jose Jaime, has the same question.
Who do you call when someone's having a nervous breakdown? Like, if I take a time and if I Google what to do in a mental breakdown, I'm pretty sure it's going to come up of call 911. There's no one. There's nobody. Just by calling 911, there's going to be officers with guns, with handcuffs, and with restraints device that only makes things worse.
So there's really not much of a dispute here. We've got family members, activists, and even law enforcement all saying this isn't the way to handle people in mental health crises. So why does it continue to happen?
To understand why there are so many mentally ill people in jails and prisons in our country, you really have to go back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Christine Montross is a staff psychiatrist at Butler Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island, and author of the book, Waiting for an Echo, The Madness of American Incarceration.
People were shifted out of state-run psychiatric hospitals with the goal of shifting mental health care from institutions to communities. And that was really a lofty, altruistic goal, because the state-run psychiatric hospitals of the 1950s and 60s were pretty draconian places where people were sometimes treated and often mistreated.
Montross is talking about the classic, stereotypical mental institution with dirty, uncared for, overly medicated patients wandering dingy hallways. Think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, or worse. So she says closing those down was a good thing.
But the funding for community care never materialized. So suddenly, severely mentally ill Americans were shifted out of state hospitals, but without funds, without treatment, without housing, they were essentially shifted from hospitals to the streets. So they were begging and sleeping outside. They were causing disturbances. Their symptoms were flaring because they no longer had treatment. And this meant they were now out of the realm of healthcare and into the realm of the legal system.
Drug-addicted mother stealing groceries? Take her to jail. Homeless veteran yelling at an invisible person in the middle of the street? Take him to jail. Young adult with undiagnosed schizophrenia lashing out at their parents? Take him to jail. In 44 states, jails and prisons now hold more people with mental illness than the largest state hospital. Montross calls this the criminalization of mental illness. She's seen it at her hospital firsthand.
And the longer that I have held that job, which I've held for 10-ish years now, the more I have seen how often my patients come in contact with police and also serve time in jail and prison.
Montross says often those encounters are a result of her patients' behaviors that had no criminal intent. In fact, these people may not even know they're committing a crime, but they're met by professionals who've been trained to control a situation by demanding compliance. Montross says it's a fundamental mismatch.
If you don't comply with instructions, then there are consequences for those actions. And when people are seriously mentally ill, they are often unable to comply.
Stop resisting.
I see this all the time in my hospital, that when people are in what we call internally preoccupied, they're hearing voices or they're seeing visions or they're feeling very, very paranoid, they're not going to be able to follow instructions or commands in the same way that someone would be able to who is thinking clearly. And this can also be true for someone who's very manic or even for someone who's profoundly depressed.
Stop moving. Stop moving.
My black brother!
Stop moving.
Okay, man. Okay, my sister. Receive me, please. I swear to God, sister. I will never
cheat
on you.
Stop moving. Stop.
Sister, please.
When someone she's treating at the hospital can't follow directions, Montross uses medication or therapy.
But when someone does not behave or comply in a punitive environment like jail or prison, the response is an increase in punishment. So this is where we see people who are extracted from their cells, who are sent to solitary confinement, who are restrained. And these are all interventions that we know exacerbate symptoms for people who are mentally ill.
Stop moving.
Pull back.
Slightly
towards us.
Keep your head down. All right. Stop moving. Keep your head down.
Keep your head down.
Stop moving.
June 2020, during the national explosion of racial justice protests, a Defund the Sheriff march is making its way through a residential neighborhood in Union City.
The people is coming for who?
Richard Biden!
We're coming for who?
Richard Biden!
They're headed for the home of Alameda County Supervisor Richard Valle, chair of the board's Public Protection Committee. A few weeks earlier, with the county facing massive budget shortfalls due to the COVID pandemic, and in spite of vocal public opposition, Valle voted to approve a $106 million funding increase for the sheriff's department.
Recently, I've heard this guy, Richard Valle, take to social media condemning the horrific state-sanctioned murder of George Floyd. What are you doing for the one department that you actually do have control over? Tell him right now why you thought it was a good idea to take $318 million out of our hard-earned tax dollars to fund more murders in our community.
Jose Bernal from the Ella Baker Center is part of a crowd confronting Valle right outside his house in the middle of a suburban intersection.
Tell the families who are here, Cristian Madrigal, he was 20 years old. Duan Armstrong, his mother, is right here. He was 23 years old. His baby was born without his dad. Raymond Reyes, 22 years old. His sister right here hasn't been able to sleep.
On 7/24, 2019, my brother Raymond Reyes Jr. was pronounced dead in Santa Rita Jail.
Supervisor Valle, who declined requests to be interviewed for this story, told the angry crowd that the $106 million increase in funding would help provide better mental health care inside Santa Rita Jail. About 20% of the money is earmarked to hire 107 more mental health services staff.
I take responsibility for that, both in funding the sheriff's department. I take responsibility for beefing up mental health for people who are incarcerated.
Valle acknowledges mental health is a problem. It's the solution that separates him from the activists heckling him for his vote. The sheriff's department wants to use some of that money to help build an entire new mental health facility at Santa Rita. Sergeant Kelly says the plan has been in the works for at least 5 years.
What would that facility look like? I think it has a law enforcement presence for safety purposes, but I think it's a facility that involves a lot of clinicians, and it'll be like a coalition, a team, a collaborative effort. And our role in it will be just security and safety and care and custody.
But Jose Jaime, Christian Madrigal's stepfather, doesn't think that plan would do much to eliminate situations like Christian's death.
I want to believe it's for good. I want to believe they're going to do a big change to really help to change the process and the procedures of the jail, but it's not true.
In many parts of the U.S., the local jail is already the largest mental health care facility in the city or county. Beefing up Santa Rita's capacity wouldn't end the criminalization of mental illness. Instead, he says it would further cement it in place. An alternative approach, which many advocacy groups are calling for, is to spend that money on community-based mental health and rehab programs, unattached to Santa Rita.
And I think as a society, we have to take a time and see what are the needs. And those needs are not at jail. Definitely, they're not at jail. I don't know if it's a psychiatric hospital, but police is not the answer. Jail definitely is not the answer. Again, I don't know the perfect answer, but I know where the money should not go, and that's to jail.
In some parts of the country, that redirection of resources away from the criminal legal system has already begun. In Oakland, I'm Andrew Stelzer for Cross Currents.
Tune in tomorrow at 5 for part 2 of the story. We'll travel up and down Interstate 5 to see how mental health crises are being addressed outside the Bay Area, with unarmed social workers and massive investment in permanent stable housing.
You can't get well in a cell. The jail is overcrowded. The clinicians who are trying desperately to care for ill people in the jail are understaffed, under-resourced.
That's tomorrow at 5. The series was co-reported by Sarah Shord, supported by the National Geographic Society's Emergency Fund for Journalists and the Pulitzer Center. The Cross Currents team includes Annalise Finney, Andrew J.M. Garcia, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.